over America's electoral and executive processes. And now, here's May.
Oh, good afternoon. This is Dialogue Conspiracy, March the 4th, Monday, March the 4th. It's 1 month since the kidnapping of Patricia Hearst, and if you heard the news accounts for 15 minutes earlier, the news is coming in with opinions on the kidnapping of Patricia Hearst in the Bay Area. A professor criminologist is believing that the Sinhalese Army is a right-wing plot. The black community in Oakland is beginning to think it was a right-wing plot that killed Dr. Marcus Foster. For the last 3 weeks on Dialogue Conspiracy, we have talked about that matter, and we'll go right into it. The kidnapping of Patricia Hearst is Watergate West. I call it Watergate West. I think it's the most important event in the United States since the assassination of John Kennedy, and I've mentioned that before on other programs. America has just a few chances to survive as a democracy, as a form of government, which we thought we have. It is far from perfect, but there are worse forms of government. And this is the test case of how far we can go into a fascist state if we don't halt the forces behind this kidnapping. There's a book out by Kenneth Lamott that came out about a year ago called, the title of it is Anti-California, Report from Our First Parafascist State. And I'd like to read to you just two paragraphs from that book in the introduction, page 4 and 5. Mr. Lamott says, in quotes, California is the distant warning system for the rest of the United States. California is our window into the future. California is the center of the whirlpool where all the currents come to a focus. Reports from California are the minutes of the next meeting. What is going on here is not the super urban nightmares of New York and Chicago or the slow rot of the South or the death of the political spirit in Washington, D.C. What is going on here instead is something that is even more dismaying. The disintegration of a state that should have been the brightest and the best, the corruption of the promised land itself. Here in California, we are, to begin with, governed by charismatic buffoons, men so clownish it is hard to take them serious as politicians, but men who are not reluctant to use their tremendous powers. We are the garrison state preeminent, with a third of our people depending for daily bread on the production of bombs, missiles, napalm, and all other obscene items found in the modern catalog of death. In California, war is literally the health of the state. We are, in a real sense, a racist state, not only in the familiar confrontation of black and white, but also in the continued and deliberate subjugation of Native Indians, the Chicanos, the Mexican Americans, who are treated both officially and unofficially as immigrants from an inferior culture, fit for stoop labor and restaurant work. Finally, the best of the middle generation of Californians suffer from moral apathy, what the Greeks call anomia. The medieval monks called it anomia. It is known as apathy. Can we, and this is the end of the quote, and I should also mention California is the state with 22,000 prisoners and becoming one of the worst prison conditions in the entire United States in terms of repression, tortures, isolation, and mismanagement of human beings and mistreatment of them as if they were human beings. Now, how much apathy is there in California? How much can you get out of yourselves and put yourselves into surviving, into the system, as if it were really sinking and you had to paddle to save your life? We'll talk about the Patricia Hearst kidnapping, and as I talk, take a pencil or run for a pencil and write down some notes. And I want you to do something about this program. I want you to write letters to the editor in your local newspaper. Nobody ever writes in information on some of this Hearst material that we give every week on this radio show. Call radio talk shows. There was a new paper. A paper came out last week in San Francisco last Friday. Their article called From Dallas to the Watergate. And people were calling Jim Dunbar and asking about Mae Bressler, referring, using my name up there all the time. People should be calling the talk shows and repeating some of the information that we bring about on these programs. You write to members of Congress, Mr. Tunney, Senator Tunney, Cranston, Kennedy, even Bert Talcott, any member of Congress or members of Congress, write your assembly in Sacramento, Jerome Waldie, Mr. Moretti, particularly the men that want to run for governor in this state because they'll more likely to read your letters, or Mr. Bielenson or Cerruti. Write to members of the California Supreme Court and Mr. Mosk, Judge Mosk, or Wright, any of them. Write your congressional members, and this is what you say. You say that Mae Bressel lives in your local community. She spent 10 years of research on political assassinations. She can relate this research and the Hearst case to the past people that killed Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and that this is a signal for domestic internal warfare in the United States now that your leaders or our leaders or people's leaders, if they've wanted them, have all been murdered. We cannot write to California authorities like the Attorney General Evel Younger, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Police Department, the Department of Corrections. It would be like the Watergate case. It would be John Mitchell as the Attorney General investigating the Watergate case. The Hearst kidnapping and the Symonese Liberation Army is a complicated intelligence operation in the United States manipulating our citizens, and you cannot write to the manipulators to solve the problem. It's a national problem. It's a national problem. I once wrote to various congressmen about Hugo Pinnell when I was at his trial in Salinas, and they wrote back, that's a state problem. It isn't a state problem because the LEAA, the funds, come from Washington to our California criminal section in California. They come from Washington. A taxpayer's money comes back here. This is a national problem that should be hit at all levels. It is national because the federal money, tons of it, pours into California, into our prisons, and into the manipulation of these particular agents for the terror that they intend to bring down and the deaths that they've brought already, which are about 60 in the San Francisco Bay Area and 100 or more down through the state of California, but right now they're mounting very rapidly. The money's coming from federal money, taxpayers' money, LEAA. Persons are being imported into the state like Russell Little, and will go into the chain of command, who's now in San Quentin, who allegedly shot Dr. Foster. We can't say he did. He's in prison now, but the boy was brought here from Florida, and I'll show you the chain of connection. Mr. Wolf, right down to the Department of Corrections where they set up Mr. DeFries. The national war, it's a national problem because men train young Americans, our government does, like Jose Romero, to go to Vietnam. He came home, he went back twice, he was in intelligence, he was a trained military man, and then he returns and brings a war to our streets. The cyanide bullets, the killing of respectable citizens, poor citizens, unsuspecting citizens. The war in Vietnam has trained these people, and the Phoenix program at home has brought them home to bring war on the streets. The kidnapping of Reg Murphy in Atlanta, Georgia, is directly linked to the Patricia Hearst kidnap, and it becomes a national problem. It's not isolated state problems. The media is handling them as if they were state problems, and we'll go into that. It's a national problem because future kidnappings are going to take place, and there'll be a reign of terror at every airport, at every state capital, and public officials will be afraid. There already were guards. There was a golf tournament down in Florida this last week, and the Wackenhut Corporation that is part of this paramilitary operation has put security guards on men playing golf. No threats on their lives at all. They're not public officials, but the implication is that anyone in America is in trouble, and in order to have a golf tournament, you need the Wackenhut Corporation to guard you. Future kidnappings will take place, and in addition to kidnappings, we will have cold-blooded, calculated murder built up for the murder of Patricia Hearst to set off a very bad scene in this country. This is a national problem with national money, trained military personnel, and it cannot be handled at a state level any more than problem of the Watergate could have been investigated by the FBI or the Justice Department. It takes a special committee of Congress and special investigators to go into the evidence. This is the script of the week of Reg Murphy back in Atlanta, Georgia. He was kidnapped February 21st, 2 weeks after the Hearst kidnapping. The New York Times, February 24th, had an interesting remark by Reg Murphy. He gave a description of his kidnapping, and there were several things he said. In an hour, he was giving a description after he was returned. He said, in an hour, he pulled into a driveway. The man was driving him around in the trunk of the car and taking him to where they would stay overnight. In an hour, he pulled in a driveway and backed into a carport, I think. He opened the deck lid and he asked for somebody he could call at the paper. I gave him Jim Minter's name and phone number. We had set up a similar procedure when there were demands that we be ready to act 2 weeks earlier in the Patty Hearst kidnapping. Now that's one of the first clues. What in Atlanta, Georgia, were they going to be ready to act at the time Patricia Hearst was kidnapped? What was going to happen down at that paper that they were ready to act when California Patricia Hearst was kidnapped? That's New York Times, February 24th. Now, here's another quotation. Reg Murphy said, he was explaining the man who kidnapped him by the name of William Williams kept asking him to ask questions about the American Revolutionary Army down in Atlanta, Georgia. He was very proud of it. And he said it had 223 members and 6 colonels. It commands American Eagle Division located in the southeast. That's the Florida area where Mr. Little could have come from when he arrived in California to be set up in the California prisons with Mr. DeFreeze, and we'll go into that. He said the American Eagle Division located in the southeast, the northeastern section, is called the American Falcon. The northeastern section could include the Ku Klux Klan and the Aryan Knights that I spoke about last week on the program as linked to the escalation of this race war. He couldn't be specific, this is Reg Murphy, about some of the details, and he knew little political philosophy of his own army, but he said the army had plastic explosives, handguns, automatic weapons. It didn't have to organize much on the West Coast because there are enough radicals out there to follow our lead. And if we're caught, you tell them we know all about the Symbionese Liberation Army. Now this is a far right-wing radical in Atlanta, Georgia, who for his security was telling Reg Murphy in the event that they get caught, just let them know that we know about the American Symbionese Liberation Army, that the paramilitary in the Southwest didn't need to take care of California because they had their own group. Well, the minute Mr. Williams was arrested, and he had said, if we're caught, tell them that we know all about this Liberation Army in the West Coast. The minute he was arrested, the U.S. Marshals came in, and they sent a message to the jail where he was handcuffed and kept with his wife. And the message was this: William Williams has suicidal tendencies. Now that reminds me of the stripper that worked at Jack Ruby's club that was suicidal, that hung herself in the jail just shortly after Lee Harvey Oswald was killed. The message I get from this man was blabbing his mouth off on the Southwest, and he left notes which linked him to Mr. Stoner of the States Rights Party. James Ray's brother works for Mr. Stoner, the man who allegedly shot Martin Luther King but didn't, the patsy of that political assassination. His brother works for Mr. Stoner, and it seems William Williams is a friend of Stoner's and also has contact with various oil, Arab oil interests. He's violently anti-Semitic, belongs to the paramilitary in the Southwest, and know there's a chain of command of this team, highly financed and acting in the Southwest. But in case he was caught, he thought his insurance was that he could squeal about the Liberation Army, and the U.S. Marshals counteracted with the message to tell the jailer that Williams is suicidal, so that anytime it's on the wire services now all over the country, if he's dead, he wasn't killed to silence him, he was killed because he was suicidal. The script for the week continues this way. In Atlanta, Georgia, one white man was kidnapped, and all they wanted in exchange for Reg Murphy was $70,000. They gave the money to him, and it was a nonviolent kidnapping. The white anti-Semite racist let him go. He was a good guy. He was involved with the media, heavily involved with the media, and it was important that this kidnapping get wide attention, as much attention as he could, considering the Hearst kidnapping was going on simultaneously. He also said that this kidnapping had to take place simultaneously. The Reg Murphy kidnapping was supposed to take place simultaneously at the Patricia Hearst. Now, if that isn't a national problem, I don't know what is, because How would they know when the other was going to take place? You see, the office was set up at the newspaper back there. It was to take place simultaneously, but the kidnappers were caught quickly, and Reg Murphy was returned home. So on the in the Southwest, you have a white man kidnapping, asking a certain amount of money, not being violent, releasing their victim. What do you get in California? A black man holding a white girl, sending messages out that he's one bad nigger and that they can both die.
I was going to sleep in the
And after Mr. Hirsch spent $6 million feeding all those nice poor people, they can break their bargain and show that the black man breaks his bargain as compared to the kidnapping in the Southwest. The media is controlling this situation 100%. Time magazine has an article, March 4th, 1974, called Politics of Terror, and it explains the far-right army, the Revolutionary Army, and then it goes into the American, the Liberation Army, the Symbionese Liberation Army. Now, what Time is said that the violent leftist is a fringe group that exists. They don't deny that it exists on the West Coast, but the far-right army is nothing more than a colonel who is nothing more than a fantasy of anti-Semitic redneck couple out for a cash killing. They became their big army with their team of 223 members and all of their weapons and stockpile of weapons become nothing more than a fantasy out for kicks and cash. In California, it isn't a group of sick people holding Patricia Hearst. It's a whole army that has all of America afraid. But in the Southwest, you don't have to worry. They're just a couple of people who just want American buck. The evidence of the conspiracy is put down in Time magazine. It's put down in the New York Times and the media, particularly Time magazine. Now, Reg Murphy was kidnapped, and he said that there was another man in the hotel room. They lit the cigarette for another man. He didn't talk, but there was someone else in the room. He said a woman accompanied him in the kidnapping and took his arm and let him out when he was blindfolded. And Mr. Williams' wife only is being arrested for not reporting the fact of a kidnapping, not for being part of the operation that took Reg Murphy. The third thing he said was there were footsteps outside the door going back and forth. It seemed that other people were involved. The fourth thing he said was money. When the money arrangements were being made, the gentleman who took him, Mr. Williams, said, "The money isn't for me. It's for the use of the Army." He picked up a telephone call, spoke to other individuals, told them that they were receiving the money and when, discussed the arrangements, and hung up. And yet, with those four facts, with a woman there, another man in the hotel room, people at the door that were going back and forth that were part of the operation, and the telephone calls, Time magazine, that contributes to all of the lone assassin, no conspiracy propaganda after the major political assassinations, is right in saying the Reg Murphy thing was not a real kidnapping of any sort. Now, the FBI came out with their report. It was in the Los Angeles Times, February 25th. And they said they believed the kidnapping of Reg Murphy was carried out strictly for money, and they doubted the existence of an American Revolutionary Army. The FBI doubted the existence of the Revolutionary Army. But this is the same FBI that didn't know in America that there was such a thing as a syndicate or organized crime until last year. They doubted. And the New York Times, of course, falls hard on the army on the West Coast. It's an army, and we'll go into who they are. Back east, southeast, it's not an army. It's just a husband and wife, no conspiracy, couple of people for money. But Earl Caldwell, writing for the New York Times, says the turning point of the Symbionese Army, the Hearst kidnapping, ended all doubt that the organization existed and made it clear it was indeed a terrorist group that saw guerrilla action as legitimate. He makes it out as a left-wing terrorist group, and there is no proof at all that it is a left-wing terrorist group, the Symbionese Liberation Army, and there's every bit of evidence that it was in collusion of the FBI, the San Francisco Oakland Police, and the Department of Corrections and the Attorney General in California. Now, the production of the Hearst kidnapping, the cast of characters, I've broken them down at certain points, but they seem to be taking a position now that is very clear and logical. The star of the case is going to be Donald DeFries. The supporting role is Theo Wheeler. Now, those are the only two blacks involved. They're both black men, and they're manipulated and controlled by white racists and law enforcement agents. The rest of the cast is all white, but you'll think of it as a black production by the time it's over. One of the matters is that Donald DeFree's family lives in Cleveland, Ohio, his ex-wife and two babies, and his mother. The FBI went in there, knocked down the door, broke the place open, grabbed diaries and notebooks. He doesn't live there anymore. And cleaned out the place without knocking or asking to see who was home. They were at the shopping center market, and the place was torn down. You don't see the FBI running into the white families on the West Coast, whose names we'll list. They go into a black family who is poor and defenseless, just like they could march in and shoot the Black Panthers when they were asleep at night. They just stormed into the place. You know of DeFreeze's family in Cleveland, but how much do you read about the white families on the West Coast from the racist FBI? The cast of characters is Donald DeFreeze, the star, and Theo Wheeler, his companion. Now, the white cast is Willie Wolfe from Pennsylvania, who never knew a black person or was interested in blacks before he came out to California. Took a black studies program at the University of California, and then was, in quotes, invited by our very hospitable Department of Corrections to come down and meet black radicals or blacks at Vacaville, known for its mind control and behavior modification programs. Willie Wolfe, Russell Little, Jose Romero, these are the supporting cast, these three white men that make up the army they're talking about up there. Wolf was from Pennsylvania. His father's a doctor, well off. They live in a town in Pennsylvania who came to California, went to Berkeley, right down to Vacaville. Russell Little lived in Florida. What contacts he had with blacks or black heroes or black personalities is not told in the script or the media yet, but he lived in Florida and he came to California in the summer of 72, where he met Willie Wolf, and within 1 month, they were down at Vacaville Prison. That has to be a clandestine operation, because there's no way, you have to have applications to get in and visit prisoners. And unless the timing is wrong, but something that you read in the media, the dates aren't always accurate. But if this is accurate, it would be impossible for him to come from Florida, make a connection to Wolf, and be in Vacaville within a very short time in the same summer. You'd have to build up a correspondence with a prisoner. You'd have to give a reason why you're visiting them. They have to check you out. You have to have a certain time for permission. You just don't walk into the California prisons. And white men don't walk in and see black prisoners that way. There is no way. So you have Mr. Russell Little coming from Florida. Later, Little is going to room with Jose Romero. Little will provide the patsy, Mr. DeFreeze, and Romero, with his Vietnam experience, provides the weapons and the cyanide bullets and the equipment, because these two black ex-prisoners, escapees, aren't going to go around Berkeley or Oakland buying the weapons necessary for this kind of an operation. So from Florida comes Little, who meets Wolf, and they go directly to Vacaville Prison, where they get interested in a black culture program. Now that has to be the funniest kind of thing, the hospitality of the Department of Corrections and our Attorney General wanting to turn on black radical prisoners to their own identity when they're doing everything to isolate them and humiliate them inside the California prison. The supporting role is a cast of four girls who I understand through the Berkeley Barb says are taking care of Patricia Hearst. I don't know if this is true or not. One or two or more of them. Joanne Little, a report said that that was a wife of Russell Little. Another report said it was his sister. Joanne Little used to visit Vacaville, the black culture program. Nancy Ling Perry used to visit Folsom. For what purposes, I don't know yet, but she visited the prisoners at Folsom. Robin Steiner visited Vacaville, and Mary Alice CM visited Vacaville. Those four girls are the cast of characters of the Simonies Army. This is the great army. Donald DeFreeze, prisoner. Theo Wheeler, prisoner. Two blacks. Whites. Willie Wolf, Russell Little, Jose Romero. Three white men and four girls. Four white girls. Now, the purpose of visiting these black prisoners was, this is the cover story, to give them pride and identity. The black culture program was to give black men at Vacaville pride and identity. And Mr. DeFreeze did them a favor, so he was eligible for parole after 2 years, and the favor was behavior modification. So Mr. Little from Florida and Mr. Wolf from Pennsylvania, who didn't know each other except for 1 month, get themselves down to Vacaville within 1 month, and later Mr. Little and his roommate Romero are going to be charged for allegedly killing a black school superintendent who had worked his way up to the top of the ladder in terms of education, of where a black man could go in our system in terms of working in the system. They're going to be charged with killing a black man who works in the system. So how are they going to give pride to a black man in the Vacaville prison when we know the California prison has record of every possible radical in the state of California and in the prison system? Now, the star Donald DeFreeze is going to become the first black patsy of American folklore, similar to Lee Harvey Oswald or Braemar, James Ray, Sirhan the script, he will be ordered probably to kill Patricia Hearst. The purpose of going at length into the espionage part of this is to stop her from being killed, but the script, I'm sure, was to prolong the media control until everyone got to know her as a person, identified with her person, and then they could come down and kill her, and it would all fall on Donald DeFreeze, the star. The script, he left home at 13. His mother said he had a violent temper. He was filled with anger. They're already creating the profile for him. You see, nothing about Willie Wolf, nothing about Little Romero. There's no profile, but we already have poor Donald DeFreeze, the typical alleged assassin, the patsy, the fall guy. It's out of the same CIA psychological script that they did the others. He's left home, they tell you, his mother said he had a bad temper. He went to New Jersey. He went to New York. He was charged with various arrests. He had no home. Well, he found a home in Los Angeles. In the L.A. criminal conspiracy section, he found a home. And if you read Lewis Tackwood's book, The Glass House Tapes, you can see what happened to Donald DeFreeze when he hit L.A. He was arrested for taking a bike through a signal, and at that time they found possession bombs and weapons, and he was charged for robbery. And in exchange for all this, and not going into the regular prison system, through the regular prison system, and getting his 6 to 14 years, he was allowed to go to Vacaville for a 2-year program in black culture, then sent to Soledad Prison, where he was allowed to walk away like James Ray was allowed to leave the Missouri Penitentiary, and 18 months later he was charged for allegedly being responsible for the death of Martin Luther King. Now, they knew that Sin Q could take this part off well, because when he went to court, he represented himself. He was identical to Rochelle McGee, who believes that he's on a slave trip, and he is. I don't say he believes, he is. And they patterned Sin Q, gave him the name Sin Q that Rochelle McGee uses. DeFreeze got the name Sin Q just when he was transferred from Vacaville to Soledad. That was his identity. They built him up with, he would be a hero, the same heroism that Jack Ruby got from the CIA. Sin Q would be a great marshal, and all the radicals would be behind him, and they built him up. This young black man came to L.A. He appears in court to defend himself. He's very unhappy about the image of himself. He had psychological testing. He was sure he would be acquitted, that he was innocent of charges down there. They gave him psychological testing, the police department. He was intelligent, but the report said that he had a bad image of himself. To be a young black in America would be natural to have a bad image. They gave him the pitch of the slave revolt, and he was sent to Vacaville for the behavior modification program. And this is where Mr. Wolf and Mr. Little came to visit DeFreeze and to give him the pitch, and then send him out to Soledad, where he would walk away. Mr. Little had asked for his parole. We went into that last week. It was turned down, but he did walk away. Mr. Wheeler walked away from Vacaville. They knew each other 1 month there, but they had friends in common in the Bay Area. And then they were to meet these people in the Bay Area. They knew them from visiting down at Vacaville. And the whole group went under. Who were these teachers that were coming into the Black Culture Center? One of the clues for the people listening in the Bay Area that get these tapes is to find out how much education Mr. Little had with blacks at all, or Mr. Wolf, that gave them the credentials to go into the prison system as teachers and meet with these people where they had the Maoist flag and the black fist and black radical identity. And into that prison system was visiting Mr. Wolf, who was bringing propaganda about. He was already bringing information. He belonged to a group in Oakland, and he was bringing DeFries information and hate material about Dr. Marcus Foster into the Vacaville prison. Well, if he's only been in there for 2 years out of a 6 to 14 year stint, and you don't think he's going to be out, what good is it to foster a black identity by turning him against Dr. Marcus Foster up in the Bay Area? In the fall of 72, Mr. DeFries leaves Vacaville and is placed over in Soledad, where he will be leaving in March. And then Mr. Wolf and Mr. Little lose their identity. The two teachers that are down at the Black Culture Center in Vacaville go under. DeFries goes to Soledad. But while he's at Soledad, nobody knows him there as a black radical. Why not? He's had a Maoist flag at Vacaville. They've done the fist thing. They've gone into the bad Dr. Foster. They're supposed to be extremists. Later, DeFries is going to come out and offer himself as a hitman to various radicals in the barrier, and they didn't want him. They thought he was CIA. Why can't he talk black radical talk out at Soledad? Because if he did, they'd put him in the hold. They'd put him at maximum security. What he was trained to say and do, he has to keep quiet. He has to be put out in the laundry room or minimum security where he can walk off. So he can't be a black radical at Soledad. He has to be quiet from December till March, because if he said one word, some guard who doesn't know what the plot is or the script is would have him down in an isolated, segregated section where the other black radicals live. But he is keeping his mouth shut, and he is programmed. He's ready with his pitch when he gets out and the doors are open and he walks out. And his buddies have already broken up in San Francisco. They had a safe house, a collective called the Peking House, we talked about last week. But they split up now, and they go separate ways. Mr. Little takes on the name of George DeFoto. He's going to become George DeFoto for the van that they have. And when he was arrested at the time after the Marcus Foster shootout, they didn't know who shot Dr. Marcus Foster. And then going down the street one night in Concord, Little and Romero were arrested. They shot a policeman. He shot back. And in the van, they found the gun that allegedly shot Dr. Marcus Foster and the literature of the Siamese Liberation Army. George DeFoto was the name that was attached to this house that was rented, where the printing machine was, where the cyanide bullets were filled. George and Nancy DeFoto. That was Nancy Ling Perry. But he, after the interim of the Black Culture Program, where they're at Vacaville working with DeFries and meeting Wheeler, so they'll know them when they escape, in quotes, escape from the California Department of Corrections. While this is going on, the men in the Bay Area have changed the name. They're getting the literature ready. And when the men escape, when DeFries leaves Soledad for March, he's up in the Bay Area. And I'm sure that he was under the wing of Wolf and Little and Romero, the teachers, Wolf and Little, that had come down to Vacaville to teach them about black identity. And George Little has changed his name to DeFoto up there. The contact man of Little, who met with DeFries, then moves in with Jose Romero. Romero has come home from Vietnam. He's the paramilitary operator trained by the Army. The contact man from Florida comes west and meets Willie Wolf. The two of them go down to Vacaville. They spend a lot of time with DeFries. They go back up to the Bay Area. The Black Culture Program ends when Dr. Marcus Foster is killed. But the men in the Bay Area stop coming down to Vacaville, stop going to Vacaville then. They all split when, in the fall, they had their roles that they'd take place later that they would use. And DeFries goes into Soledad waiting to walk away, and then he's protected somewhere. Little and Wolf break up, and the military man, Romero, enters the scene and moves in with George Little, who changes his name to DeFoto. And he also has his a house under the name of DeFoto with Nancy Ling Perry in the Bay Area up at Concord. Nancy has taken on these various names. A getaway car was registered in her name under the name DeFoto. Now, Wheeler and DeFries and Romero and Little were roaming around the Bay Area, trying to infiltrate various organizations, the Vietnam Veterans, the United Farm Workers. Mr. Romero tried to set up a Vietnam Veterans group in Oakland. He worked for a while at the United Farm Workers. This is the veteran from Vietnam who supplies the paramilitary, I believe, for this operation, the know-how for this operation. He would be the man. Mr. Little was in to the Venceremos group, which is heavily infiltrated with CIA agents. DeFreeze offered himself to be a hitman in the Bay Area. And Mr. Wheeler, for a while, was a jailhouse attorney, a bright fellow, intelligent, like DeFreeze also. And he was into the Venceremos and with these people. The group tried to infiltrate the various organizations. They had a set opinion how to do things. They wanted to take over. They moved in secret. And none of the organizations they moved into respected them. When the Foster thing came down, they disassociated themselves. There's no radicals in the barrier. They're going in for that kind of violence or killing, and they suspected these men of being agents of the right wing and had no part of them and have no part of them now. The radical group suspected them all along of being possible CIA agents. The only violence that comes down in the United States government, well, I won't say the only, but the great bulk of it that is financed and protected is done by the police departments, the FBI, and the agents provocateur all over the country. The 1960s and the 1970s will be unraveled little by little, and many of these trials are opening up. In every single case, there was an agent provocateur who brought in the weapons, instigated the violence, set fire to the buildings, created the havoc that the parents and the faculty and the congressmen thought the youth were doing. And when there's a fair trial, when the trial really comes out, and if there's good attorneys, the evidence shows that the violence is coming from a set group who want to scare the general community about what is happening in this country. The street scene escalates in San Francisco. This is the script again, the Russell and Little, DeFreeze and Wheeler in the Bay Area. Meanwhile, the street scene escalates, getting ready for the Hearst kidnapping and the fear that will be spreading from California across the country. The best way to do it is to use the media. If you want to get a little advertising for a cough drop or deodorant, it costs $30,000 for 1 minute. If you want to call attention to America that a group of radical terrorists are taking over America, you can get prime time television cameras standing on the lawn of Mr. Hearst for 1 month, for 30 days. The first media, well, there may have been other attacks or use of the media, but I don't have them. In my research, the first one was the KGO shooting where Lawrence Kwong was turned into a zombie, walked around the building, aimed a gun. He didn't kill Jim Dunbar. He shot through glass. It was bulletproof. He went around the building and killed Ben Munson. This man, Lawrence Kwong, if it's properly investigated, you would find was programmed to do these killings and then killed himself. The next escalation was the multiple deaths in San Francisco that synchronized with the Black Muslim conventions prior to Christmas. And then after all of January, we had our Operation Zebra, 14 deaths and four in Oakland. And then February the 4th, the Patricia Hearst kidnapping. Now, the media in San Francisco, the attention they got of the KGO, this is the use of the media. The KGO killing got a lot of attention because it happened while Dunbar was on the air. The shooting got a lot of mileage. In Atlanta, Georgia, getting back to the kidnapping of Reg Murphy, the kidnappers told him, and this has been printed in the New York Times, Washington Post, that they were going after Don Elliott Heal from WSB-TV, that they wanted to take a TV man and plan to do him next or first, but that was the man that they intend to kidnap. William Nolan, the newspaper publisher, who passed away suspiciously found dead with no notes or messages or reason to commit suicide. The Seminese Liberation Army was leaving messages down below at the Oakland Tribune on what to do with Patricia Hearst. Patricia Hearst is the daughter of Randolph Hearst, and their yard is used for the international national media with telephone poles set up and the most complicated kind of coverage to go all over the world at any hour, at any minute. Down in Georgia, in Atlanta, Georgia, Mr. Murphy said that Mr. Williams, who kidnapped him, was very edgy because the 5 o'clock news came on and the tapes that they made, the tape cassettes, identical to the plan in the Hearst case, didn't first make the news at 5 o'clock like it was supposed to, and he was very edgy. The way it was described means, what I take from what Mr. Murphy was saying was that the man had instructions to be sure and get it on the media with as much coverage, and he wasn't doing a good job because the media wasn't covering it. It wasn't just that he wanted $70,000 that the publisher knew where to turn it over, but he wanted national radio or TV and press time, and he was very edgy that he wasn't doing the right job, and very disagreeable and relieved when it did make the media. He was in contact with all the people he wanted, but it had to make the national media. This thing, like they said, had to be synchronized, and he had to do his job well. And then the Symonese Liberation Army made it very clear in their communiques that they were to play these entire documents in the newspaper, into the media, and publicize it as much as they could. Well, it makes the cover of Time or Newsweek. It'll make every newspaper. It's getting all the publicity it can possibly have, and they're getting a lot of mileage per minute for to spread the word of terror. As I say, when a golf tournament is taking place in Florida and there's personal guards because of the Hearst kidnapping, no threats, you can imagine how much coverage. And now the Symonese Liberation Army has sent out messages to 5 governors of states, so these various states become personally involved also. Now, what's going to come of all this in the next week? This is like a soap opera, week to week here. You know, is she going to live? Is she going to die? Is the horse going to fall off the cliff? You know, they are stringing this thing out. The conditions of the payments were to string it out for a long time. What is happening in San Francisco? The bad of it is that no matter what Donald DeVries does, he is going to get it in the neck one way or the other. There isn't much chance of his surviving with any dignity or telling what happened to him in the process in Los Angeles of being computerized or turned into a zombie. So he has nothing to lose by killing Patricia Hearst and killing himself. The persons involved in our legal branches are egging him on. The Evel Younger, the Attorney General, and Mr. Saxby, the Attorney General, one of California, one in Washington, and Mr. Kelly of the FBI, are already hammering away for stricter laws and scaring our assemblymen up in Sacramento with bodyguards and saying no amnesty and we can't give in to kidnappers. And they're making it loud and clear that the answer to all this is punishment. They're not saying, let's take Donald DeVries and see why he did the thing he did so that our children and citizens won't be terrorized anymore. They don't say, let's study. There's not one article say, let's study the mind of this person and see why they're forced to this position, which they obviously don't want, and no homes and nowhere to go. Who can raise these children if their mothers kick them out when they're 13? What kind of schools can we have where unwanted children, before the times of birth control or abortions, had a lot of unwanted children. We had children that families couldn't support, racial minorities, that families broken up, and no fathers, and children like to freeze out on the streets. The answer to the Hearst kidnapping isn't, what can we do to help Donald DeVries? It's, how should we punish him? What punishment can we give to anyone like him? So knowing that he has on his record, they let him escape like James Ray, so they can always bring him back. That's the hold they have. They had this with Tackwood, too. The provocateurs have a prison record behind them. So what chances does DeVries have? So with that in mind, with the mentality of our professors and our law enforcement, our society, what, with that mentality, where has DeVries got to go to be intelligent about this thing, even if he learns to like Patricia Hearst? Where has he got to go, and what's the point? They build up his ego to the point that he's a hero, that he's willing to die for this thing, the kamikaze kind of thing. He can easily kill her, and I don't know if he has a choice. He may be programmed to kill her, like Lawrence Kwong was in San Francisco, to program and kill himself after he did the shootings at KGO. Now, what good can come of all of this? Well, I understand that Mr. Little wants to talk up in San Quentin. Isn't it unusual that Romero and Little are housed in San Quentin and not any other jail? Everything is unusual about this case, like it is in all the political assassinations, just like the FBI says it's a lone assassin down in Georgia, when it obviously isn't. It's synchronized to the Hearst case. What can come of this? Will Mr. Little and Wolf and Romero could talk, they could get off easy. If DeFreeze kills Patricia Hearst, they may let all of the white ones off and make it look like the black man killed the white girl. Mr. Little and Romero could prove that they didn't kill Dr. Marcus Foster, that they only had the gun, and Dead Man DeFreeze would take the rap, and they would be off in that case, and that may in fact have happened that way. There are too many people involved in this case. Too many people are onto it. They're watching it. They're getting smarter every day. The Bay Area is filled with articles about the right wing, the paramilitary. I think that the chain of command is available. I've broken it down. That's why I want you to write to your congressman, call the talk shows, write to your local paper, write to Sacramento, write five letters. If everyone is listening today and writes five letters and calls one program and says, look, there is a chain of command. It can be broken down between George and California. It's not enough to say it's a CIA operation. Say, let's get together. Mae Brussel has this work. We want
I
the truth out.
I can get
we want to
room.
Save
can
Patricia Hearst. We want to save Donald DeFreeze. I don't think one life is more valuable than another. I think that he has suffered as much as she is suffering 1 month that she's had. I think he's had a lifetime that America's put on him. And I think before he destroys himself, we should try something intelligently for a change and not act like we have of always punishing. Well, that's it for a day. We'll see you next Monday. Keep well, and we'll follow this the next series. Will Patricia be alive next Monday? We'll see.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for over 10 years...